Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're at the Rye Street Tavern. We've got Sagamore, let's see, Cognac Finish, which I think I'm enjoying. Wait, I don't know, which one am I drinking?
Oh, I think Matt, what'd you pour for us, Matt?
This label's not open, so it's definitely not the Sagamore. But we've talked spirits, we've talked development, we've talked Buffalo, we haven't talked any sports, and I usually stick to sports.
Who are we talking with?
Mark Weller's here, and we are at Port Covington. I ain't gotten to that.
I know you would.
What's your title? I don't even know. Usually I have like the title on my screen. It's CEO or executive vice. What is your actual title?
You know, I'm new to this title thing. I always try to be everybody to everybody and, you know, literally had titleless cards. But yeah, I'm the CEO and president.
Well, Mark, Nestor and I are going to fight over the next 20, 25 minutes. We have so many questions. I eventually want to get, and I want to make sure we don't get out of here, think about a little bit going on. I want to talk sort of in five-year increments as to what this thing's going to look like. But I want you to take us back to the beginning again, because you've talked about the South Baltimore 7. You've talked about the $130 million community benefit. I remember we followed it closely. My good friend Kevin Kamenetz was obviously following it closely in the county. As you mentioned, you're working closely with John Olszewski now. This wasn't like you and Kevin Plank said, hey, we're going to do this, and everybody said, hey, that's wonderful. Welcome with open arms. You had hard work to do, both with the communities and with the elected officials. Talk about the hard work and how you got there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many steps in that part of the project to get there. And so the first thing you do is you really got to get out there and look around and see who are my neighbors. And then you got to see who am I affecting the most. And the challenge here was we did find our neighbors. That was easy, right? We found the South Baltimore 7, which includes, you know, Westport, Lakeland, Cherry Hill, Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, and then us, Port Covington. So we found that. That was pretty easy. But then we started to realize we were really a citywide project. We were something that was larger than just our adjacent neighbors.
Were you going to draw from more than just these areas?
We just felt like we had I think the biggest thing of all is we felt like we had the ability to help people from one end of the city to another in some way, shape, or form. And while we weren't going to try and boil the ocean, we thought there was a good opportunity to really allow the positive ripples of what was going to happen here help other communities in other places that needed it a lot. So we started looking at who was who and who was out there, and we just started meeting with people, quite frankly. Met with as many groups as possible. I was in people's kitchens. I was in board meetings. I was in group, all kinds of different groups.
This is 12, 13?
This goes into 14, going into 15, starting to get to know people. This is a small city, but it's also a big city. There's a lot of different groups. There's a lot of different opinions and a lot of different thoughts. And one of the things we realized pretty quickly was we would have a better result overall if we could convince people to band together. Now, this sounds opposite of how you would think of how to do community work at this level. We said, like the SB7 is a great example. We wanted the remaining groups, we wanted them to have one unified voice and one unified opinion. We didn't want those different groups sort of fighting or having infighting about what it is that they wanted for their communities. And what they did is they took that really to heart, and they knew that was in their best interest, and they went out there and figured out how to become this unbelievable unified group. And like I said, I think most development folks or government folks would think that that was a harder thing to do and a harder way to do this. We in fact found it not to be. Did it take more time? Yes. But what happened is we were able to hear one voice. We were able to hear one goal. So, and in this case, it was 20 goals, 20 voices. But the point was, it was all consolidated into one idea of what the priorities were inside their communities. And so that was the first step. After that, we started to reach out to everybody everywhere, including the unions, reaching out to elected officials, anybody that would listen, really, that we thought would have a point of view on the project. And we started rolling out our messaging. And our messaging was, this is what we're going to create here. This is what it might probably look like. It's going to be a whole bunch of jobs. We want to lock in on, you know, the affordable housing component. We want to lock in on the jobs component. And we started making commitments. And that's how we got to the $130 million commitment around community benefits for the city of Baltimore.
What does that look like? I mean, that's a big number. So when folks are out there, they're
this
in
is
their,
a big book. I mean, it's a big website.
Right, right. Yeah. They're in their car.
And all of this stuff's out on the website, right?
Look, yeah, everything's there.
They're in their car, and they're hearing $130 million community benefit.
Yeah.
Put a face on that.
Okay, to give you the kind, well, actually, to go further, put a face. The kind of things that this would have in it are things like workforce training programs. This would have affordable housing tied into it in some way, shape, or form. This would have different events that we put on for the community. This would have different kinds of transportation initiatives that we can help the community with. Anything that we can put into this that can eventually give back is what we've been trying to put in there.
PortCovington.city.
Yeah,
literally.
That's actually the website. Yeah,
good job. Okay.
And it breaks down all the different initiatives. But I think that thinking about how where the most important dollars are spent in our city around youth and around education and around workforce training is where those dollars are going.
So go ahead, Nestor.
No, you after you. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say. So now we get it done. We get the political support before we talk about the taking a look at it 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years out.
Yeah.
One of the things I always found the most difficult, Mark, and I don't know why, was explaining to the public what a TIF is, because mm-hmm. they hear in massive big developments, very often the developers rely on what we call tax incremental funding.
Sure.
You've done it a lot.
I'm a citizen, right? So yeah. I'm thinking, like,
you're hearing tax
you
income.
Built a lot over there. We probably gave you one hell of a tax break that somebody's going to be upset about and say it was too much.
Yeah.
You're going to say, hey, you don't want us here? We'll take this right. to Pittsburgh or Buffalo or wherever right. developers take money that's not yeah. here. And we heard a lot about this with Amazon, right?
Yeah.
6 months ago, a year ago, because clearly they're rainmakers on a rainy day down here
yeah.
at the Rogers.
Yeah.
But that would be my thing as a citizen, or to say to the next mayor, hey, you're the next mayor. Go fix it up. But that area, they don't pay taxes. And the one thing I've learned about Baltimore as a taxpayer who pays too much in taxes
yeah, yeah.
is that the hospitals don't pay. The nonprofits profits don't pay. So I'm paying more because they're paying less, and that would be a civic concern.
Yeah.
And I was also going to ask you, maybe this is a piggyback on where I was going to interrupt on, which is, you had six community groups in here. What was the thing they were most pissed about? What was the thing that they was getting in the way? What was the thing that bothered them the most, other than the fact that maybe they didn't want you here or didn't understand, you know, what this represented? What's the number one civic complaint that leads to people like you running off and going somewhere else?
Well, I think one of the comments we heard in a meeting one time was, you know, a woman from the community over in Cherry Hill said, you know, do I think Port Covington will be successful? Yes. But will it be successful for us?
Right.
I don't know.
Okay.
So it wasn't a complaint. It was more of a comment. And I think it was always a guy.
How do we participate?
Well, they felt left behind.
They felt left behind. And I understand why. There's been so many promises made.
Sure.
And so much disappointment. But let me.
I want to come back to
TIFs. Let me go back to TIF. I want to talk about TIF for a second.
Tax. I want to come back to TIFs.
Yeah.
Tax incremental funding. And I think Nestor's mini tirade there is what you hear from citizens from time to time.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to make tons of money anyway. Now you're going to give them a break. How do you explain TIFs?
Well, let me set the table a little bit before we get into TIF, because I want you to understand something. It costs about 8% less to build a building in Baltimore than it does in Washington, D.C. The buildings in Washington, D.C. are worth twice as much, sometimes three times as much. I don't know. Big dollars, right? Definitely twice as much. They're worth 50, 60, 70% more all the time. Without literally without the TIF dollars that could support the infrastructure here, city needs to build a city. This project is not possible under any circumstances.
There was no plumbing under here, is what you're telling me.
There's no nothing.
And there's no little boy crying wolf. It's not a bluff. That's what we try to tell folks.
No, there's no bluff to it. The city, this is what you have to understand. When you go into places that have no infrastructure, generally speaking, and even in D.C., that's why they issue TIF there. They do it on a regular basis.
Make me smart on this. When you say no infrastructure, give me the 20 nightmare headaches beyond just the rats.
There's no water. There's no sewer. There's no fiber. There's no roads. There's no curbs. There's no gutter. There's no system to deal with the water, how it gets out to the bay in a clean way. There's no exits to adequately support it on and off and in and out of here.
I knew you'd be good at this.
I could just go on. I mean, these things cost a lot of money. There's none of that. And so what is known around the United States right now is that it is the city's responsibility to build the infrastructure to allow buildings to get built. If we were simply building vertical buildings and you were going to provide me streets and water and sewer and all these things, it's a very different conversation. But when you can't give me anything to build off of, we have to build it. So what I just told you before around the cost of building here relating to Washington and the values of buildings, and you can hold me to all kinds of crazy numbers, however you want. The math don't make sense,
yeah,
okay? Baltimore does not have the values, okay? It does not have the values. And where I'm going with that is that I think that people don't understand that. And what TIF really is TIF is, let's just use in real simple terms, a piece of land is worth $100,000 right now. When we are done and we improve the land, it is worth $1 million. At $100,000, it generated $10,000 a year in taxes. At $1 million, it's going to generate, let's say, $100,000 a year in taxes. The tax increment, which is the $10,000 it was going to pay to the $100,000 that it's going to pay, is then $90,000. There's $90,000 that's available to use to finance the infrastructure, the public infrastructure, the city's infrastructure.
So it exists.
Now, many cities that don't use TIF are flush with cash, and what they do is
present bank.
They pay as they go.
Who's flush with cash when you say that? Give me an example of a place that would be flush with cash that we're competing with, right? Because that's what I always talk about.
Parts of Washington might say, we'll pay for that cash. Parts of New York say, we'll just pay for that. We'll improve that area cash. We're not going to float a bond. We're going to write a check.
So it really is rich getting richer to some degree.
Now sometimes they're going to use bonds anyways because it makes more sense, as you know, Don. It makes more sense to use bonds, to use the bond capacity to do this. But this is what we're talking about. We don't get a tax break. We don't pay for the water, sewer, all the things that the city's going to own. All of the stuff, by the way, that's built, everything that's built with the TIF dollars is given back to the city. We don't own it. It's not us. And so far, and just to be clear, you know how much money we've received from anybody so far for anything? $0.
Well,
zero
I was struck
cents.
By that because the bonds actually don't kick in until 2020. All. So, in a sense,
the water from there to here and the electricity, the stuff that never existed, that's already a sunk cost for
us. Everything's sunk there, yeah.
And what I was struck by, you all, in a sense, are advancing that money. Rather than hold the project up, you said, we're going to get started.
What happens in most cases is you would actually wait until the TIF funding started to start the project. I have unbelievable partners who have faith, who believe. And you could say, oh, yeah, you're getting further in the process. And some people say, aha, we got them. They've spent so much money, they're going to go anyways. No, that wouldn't happen. But we know what the city has agreed to contractually. We're sure that they're going to follow through on what they're supposed to follow through on. And we're creating what we're going to create. The opportunity to create 75,000 jobs and construction jobs and 40,000 permanent jobs inside the city of Baltimore doesn't exist anywhere else. It doesn't exist anywhere else in the state. And it doesn't exist very many places in the United States either. It's one of the biggest opportunities in the United States. And everybody recognizes that.
No, it's remarkable. It's exciting. That's why I said when your quote, the project is real and we're open for business. Okay, it's real. You're open for business. Now give our listeners, let's take the visual tour. Let's sort of shut our eyes and have Mark Weller take us through 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. What's it look like?
I mean, I think what this place looks like is, I think one of the big things you learn about building a really big project, and I looked around the country through many different resources to find a person that could give me the answer. How do you do this? No, there's no answer. They're all the big projects out there are all slightly different, so you have to come up with your own way you're going to get it done. But I think that the way to think about it is we are building an annex to the city of Baltimore. That's all we're doing. It's an annex to the city that will be part of the city.
A new neighborhood.
Yeah, a new neighborhood is what we're building. It's roughly the size of about one-third of the CBD, so it's pretty large. It's 14 million square feet.
Well, you mentioned D.C. and Grove Gaithersburg. I'm sure you went down to 930 Club when we were younger.
Of course.
And that was a neighborhood that was not a neighborhood that I felt comfortable in going into to see bands I really liked at that time.
Yeah.
My wife hadn't been there in like 10 years, like literally. Yeah. And we went down there 6 months ago and we drove up and it's a jaw-dropping moment outside of Howard University as to what everyone saw down there. And that's probably one of the closer things you can drive to and say, there used to be no there, now there's something. Harbor East is another. I mean, I know Alex and friend of yours and the Pataracs and everybody that's done things over there. That's something that I used to go to Bo Hager's, 20 years ago.
So did I.
Now you show up and see it's different. it's never going to look like this again, right? Yeah. What it looks like right now.
No. Well, let's go back to that. I'm saying, so if Nestor and I pop back down here, we go in a time machine, it's 5 years from now. What's happening? What's done in 5 years?
Well, I think we have at least 1.5 million square feet that'll be delivered inside a couple years down here. There'll be people, like I said, working here, living here. There'll be rental units here. In 5 years, there'll probably be some home ownership by that point, whether it's condominium or townhouse type ownership. There will be affordable home ownership down here, affordable rentals down here. There'll be lots of entertainment, including restaurants. There'll be lots of waterfront activity. There'll be tons of things to do down here. And I think, when I first started this project, one of my favorite people, David Cordish, said to me, he was looking at the project and seeing what I was trying to do. And he goes, you're bigger than the Inner Harbor. You're the Outer Harbor. And I thought he was kidding with me. And I didn't really understand what he meant. And I started to learn more about that. And his point was, look, you're right next to 95. You have a lot of acreage. You have a lot of waterfront. You have a chance to really take the same amount of people that are coming to the Inner Harbor, which is 14 million people a year, and bring them down here to the Outer Harbor. And the way we think about that, just so you know, is our goal is not to take from anywhere. Our goal is to add. And I had some Disney executives in here recently, and they talk about stay time in Disney, and they're trying to capture you for 2.5 or 3.5 days. And so we're trying to take the stay time in Baltimore from 0.75 or 1.25 for a certain type of visitor to 2.15 or 2, whatever it is. Those are days to keep them here a little bit longer, right?
Come in for a concert for a night, stay the whole week,
or at least stay the whole night, and just convert that to a longer stay time here in Baltimore. We think that we have that opportunity, but what happens here is a little bit everything. I mean, we're to be honest with you, the fire that you start here is small, but it's concentrate and it's hot, and then it gets bigger, and then from there all bets are off. A lot can happen, and a lot of the challenges that we've had, obviously, they can be around the narrative of Baltimore sometimes, which we quickly overcome. But some of them can be around who's going to be there, who's the big companies going to be there, when are they coming? And the more companies that sign up, and the more people that get interested, and the more I can talk about who's looking at or who's looked at or who's signed up, the easier it is to get more companies. So I believe in 5 years we will have, 2.5 to 4 million square feet built out, well beyond what we plan in the next two. And we will have a really exciting place. It's really inclusive. There's lots to do where you don't have to spend money. There's lots to do where you can. I like to say, I live all lives in my life. I have 5 children, so I do stuff with
4 boys and a girl. That's got to be something.
That's
how does the girl? Does the girl rule the roost?
Totally.
Right. She's got her brothers wrapped around her.
She does whatever she wants. I'll tell you about that later. But yeah, she's amazing. But the point is that I look at it through all those lenses. Me and my wife hanging out on a cool night. Me taking clients out. Me going out with some friends from high school. Me taking my kids out to do something. And I think that this project allows me to do all of it. Similar to what Harbor East can do in many regards too. And by the way, Harbor East, I want to talk about that for a second. Many people have said great things about Harbor East. And some people have been critical. I would have done this. I would have done that. And this, I say, that is a most amazing project to get built. When it got built and how it got built. And I like to say, there's certain people that people should just throw a parade for and say thank you.
Right.
And the Patarakis family in general, you're just going, thank you. Thank you. What did I do before Port Covington was here? I went up to Sagamore Farm to show them what we were, we talk
sure.
up there.
Right.
And I went to all of Harbor East. That was it. Right. Where did I make sure they stayed when they came into town? They stayed at the Four Seasons. Right. That was the first step in Baltimore's renaissance to take it to the next level. And I just think sometimes people kind of take it for granted of what happened. You're like, you have no idea the risks and the challenges that the Patarakises, the hard work and creativity that Michael Beatty put in.
They were doing okay just as a bakery. They could have just been a bakery.
Just right? could have been a bakery.
Well, that would be for Kevin. Kevin was doing okay doing shoes and clothing and
very similar story.
And
very similar
and, story. Right, sure.
They're people. That's why we tell these stories.
Yeah.
People who want to make this city better. You're clearly part of that. We were talking off the air. I've told Nestor. One of my last, I guess, official acts before my term ran out as county executive was I was at the Baltimore Economic Alliance.
Yeah.
And Mike Jenke was there from Data Tribe. And we've got county executives and the mayor sitting around the table and all kinds of business execs. And he begins his pitch. And we got a lot of pitches at the Economic Alliance. And you sort of are polite and you're listening. Well, he speaks
Shark
for about
a little bit, right?
Sort of like 30 seconds, and all of a sudden, we're all sort of looking up from our phones. A lot of times, we're checking our messages.
Yeah.
We put our phones down, and Eris Melissa Rodis is sitting next to me, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and I'm going, well, this might be a cut above. And this guy, Mike Jenke from Data Tribe, begins to tell this entire group of 30 folks sitting around his table that Baltimore is about to become the cybersecurity center of the nation, hub of the nation, yeah. And that people are going to be relocating from California to come here, and there's not anybody at that table that doesn't believe. Talk a little bit about this whole cyber thing that
I think going back to what we talked about a little bit ago is like once in a while it takes people from outside the norm and the system and the zip code to come in here and have the vision and shake it way up, right? And Mike Jenke's one of those guys.
Oh, my goodness.
He's coming in. He's been down in Maple Lawn working for a while. He's been around. He's a former Navy SEAL for many years. And he comes in here. We meet him through Damian Costa, who's one of my partners, another Navy SEAL, amazing American, amazing veteran, both of them. And they start talking about it. And they start realizing the similarities between what happened in Silicon Valley versus what's happening here in Port Covington, in a way. And out there, it was radar after World War II, and here it's cybersecurity. And there's so much infrastructure and so much talent and so many reasons why the venture capital will come, and that's what we're starting to see. It all comes off of Fort Meade and the rest of the government operations. But Fort Meade is right down the road.
Dutch was our first guest on Baltimore
and spoke about that.
Literally, that was...
Dutch is a big part of this story.
Right.
A big part of why we're able to be successful. And yes, that's it. I mean, we have a number one technology science workforce in the United States here. We have number one STEM occupations here. Number one concentration of doctoral scientists and engineers. Number one in vaccine development. Number two in professional technical workers. We have number 3% of population at 25% of bachelor's degrees or higher. We're the 5 most innovative state, according to Bloomberg in 2019, Maryland is. So you stay, even Johns Hopkins, number 10 best nationally ranked university. University of Maryland College Park, number 22 ranked. So you start putting all this together, and it really starts to add up to a reason why Maryland can own cyber. And the young folks today, like, and I think Maple Lawn and some of the stuff that's a little more suburban in Columbia will serve its part, but a lot of those folks also want to be in a more urban context. And this was the ability to create that next step to create an urban area for the young folks today to come work.
I went through Don's notes at the end, and I want to get some questions about the next mayor of the city and where the city goes. And
yeah.
I live at the harbor.
Yes.
I'm not an outsider. I'm going to say this is the reason I'm doing this is I want a better city.
Yeah.
And Don has spoken to something, and we didn't bring this up earlier, but he has spoken to the next mayor needing to have a hatred of one thing, incompetence.
Yeah.
And any of you who've ever been successful at doing this and building these places, and I talked to you before we left in the second segment about failure and succeeding. We've failed on a lot of levels in Baltimore in many ways, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Not for Jack, not for Brandon who's running, or anybody that might run. We're going to have some tough conversations here the next 6 months about whatever breaks we gave you with TIF and having you try to explain that, and where we are with Kerwin and where we are with education in our city, air conditioning, all of those things. But you're vested in this. The next mayor is really important to you, really important to me. The next leadership that's here to make this what you want it to be.
Yeah. Forget, as Nestor says, forget the person. We're not talking about people. What do you need from the next mayor?
Well, let me start by just understand how I view politics. And this is not a knock on any of the politicians in charge, because I respect what they do. They will come and they will go. We are a business. We are a business with a long-term vision. We just keep doing the same thing. We have our core values here, and we stay on our core values, and we keep working. And so we start there, and then the rest of the stuff swirls around us. We've had some pretty incredible episodes happen since this project has been conceived, and we just keep going because we stay focused. So that being said, the current administration could not be, I would say, more helpful and be a better group for us to work with than we've ever seen or I've ever seen in any city. The current mayor is pro-business. His staff is incredible. His staff is absolutely incredible. I don't know what many people know about being the council president, but being the council president for a number of years requires an incredible amount of organization and an incredible team behind you. It's not just the council president that does it. Brandon's experiencing that now. You build this on, he already had a good team, but that team's building up. So he had the luxury of bringing in an unbelievable team from the council president into the mayor's office very quickly. So if that was just another person that took that job, I don't know that would be running as smoothly as it is. So that being said, like, we think Jack's great, and we think Jack will be great for the city. I think that there's nothing I need to ask for at this point other than just continued cooperation and moving the city forward in a positive way. And I think that Jack brings that right now. And quite frankly, when I saw, I was at a big dinner recently, and Jack and Brandon were both on stage, and I was comforted. I was comforted by, I know Brandon, he is a good man. I know Jack, he is a good man. The two of them together are both good for Baltimore. So I looked at that and said, this is the best position we've been in a long time.
What do you hear, Mark? What do you hear from folks? Right before you came on today, you were talking to people about Port Covington. I imagine you spend almost every waking hour talking to potential tenants, selling them a bottle. What do you hear them say in terms of crime, and how do you view the importance of getting the whole crime thing under control?
Well, on crime, we'll come to that second, but it absolutely has to get under control. But I think as far as Port Covington goes, we don't do a lot of road shows. So a lot of people in our position will go places and try and sell people, you know, on their vision. We'll do that when we need to. We're not above it. We just found that it wasn't useful. And the reason it wasn't useful was we needed to get you here to Baltimore. If I put you at the Sagamore Pendry and I pick you up on a boat and I drive you over to this place and I tell you what we're doing, and then we go see our manufacturing incubator and we go to our really fun crab house with live music and we go see where we're making whiskey right here, and we go over and smoke a cigar at the Elk Room, and then, you know, we take you back to your hotel, and you hear the story in between, then you're sold. You're sold. You love Baltimore. You're coming here. You
think
it's great.
Well, there's value here, too, because it's been devalued to some degree.
I think so. But my point is that nobody comes to Baltimore, experiences it through our eyes, and leaves and says, that place is hopeless, that place is no good. They say the exact opposite. And so that's why we work so hard. Like, I get on phone calls to try, and my goal... Well, I'll give you my secret, which I shouldn't, but my goal is just to get you to come here. I'm just trying to get the hook in there. You know, if you fish at all, you
proximity
do see fish.
Proximity is power.
Just trying to get you. I want you to see it.
Because you think the place sells itself.
Yes. And talking about crime fighting, I mean, my version of crime fighting, like, I don't have the answers. I'm not the police chief. Like, I don't know what the right answers are. I think there's a lot of things that are fair and really unfair about our system. The way I want to fight crime is by creating opportunity and jobs. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm fighting crime. I'm fighting crime through literally creating opportunity, by bridging the gap on philanthropy, that's my version of fighting crime. That's how I'm doing it. I can't tell them what to do their job. I can tell them my concerns. I can tell them about the incidents that happened, but, you know, That's how we're doing it.
Well, greatest example would be, we had Chris Battaglia, and I would encourage everybody to go out on the Baltimore Positive a few episodes ago. Dear friend of yours, right down the street, you mentioned these six
Ben
zones.
Ben Franklin High School.
Down at Cherry Hill.
Yeah.
You know, doing it here in the city.
Yeah.
Hopefully providing education to the people that are going to be working here, right?
Yes.
And maybe living here 10 years from now.
Yes.
That's how this works. For me, at least.
Yes. No, no doubt. That's how I deal with crime. I don't have the answers. I'm not the police chief.
Right.
I'm not the mayor.
But jobs and opportunity go a long way.
Go a long way, man.
J-O-B.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're not going to let you get away. We always like to talk.
If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Nestor always makes fun of this segment, but I'm saying, your guy's got four boys, a young lady. You still like to be involved in hockey. How do you, talk a little bit about, I'm always intrigued, with four brothers, you said you had a story, and a sister. My guess is, as I said, that she runs them around, that she rules the roost.
Yeah. I mean, the house is chaos. My oldest boy is 15. Then I have a boy who's almost 14. I have Jackie, who's 15. Henry is 14. Billy, who's 12, almost 13.
How'd you make
Danny,
time to do
who's
this?
11. Like I said, I mean, you can't keep your hands off me, right? I mean, look at me. Come on.
So the house is chaos, and somehow in the midst of all that, you still coach hockey.
I don't coach anymore. Okay. I'm a dad now, a dad and a fan. But be honest with you, just running the kids around between lacrosse and hockey and doing all that on a travel schedule, I was gone. I figured it out. I was gone. I was gone 95% of the weekends this year so far. I've been gone. But I got to tell you,
watching the kids play ball.
Taking the kids, I'll take the one in the chin. I'll go to the Boston or I'll go to Detroit. But I got to tell you, like, I see, and this comes back to, like, everything that's happening in my life. You know, prior to Eileen having cancer, but I just know how important family is, and I know how important it is to spend that time. And now I see, especially with Jackie, my oldest, being in high school, and I just see how fleeting the time is. Like, they're like, all of a sudden they're not little anymore, and now they're high school, and then they're college, and then
you get to the point where you have grandkids like this guy,
which is really cool.
Actually, I'm on duty today in about an hour, so I've got to go make a school stop.
But isn't that what makes you appreciate things? Like, you see how quick it's going.
You weren't the county executive those days, right?
One of my favorite stories about that, Mark, was as a young assistant principal, Dr. Dupel, who's superintendent at the time, I've always been appreciative. He called me and wanted to promote me as principal. And I said to him, I'll work as hard as I can, but you need to know that my son is about to be a freshman in high school, and he's a basketball player. And the first thing I'm going to do when that schedule comes out is put his games on my calendar, and I won't miss them. I only get, just to what you said, I only get to do them once. And to Bob Dubell's credit, he said, I wouldn't expect it any other way. So you got to have priorities, right?
But I think that priority that I've made for myself is allowed to go into anybody that is part of my team's life as well. And I think people appreciate that, you know?
Absolutely.
Because it really is important. And it's important in finding balance, you know? And like I said, with the technology these days, you're always on anyways. I mean, the executive level people and pretty much everybody at Weller Development, they're pretty much on call 24 hours a day. They're always available. They're working so hard. And if they want to take time like that, they can. They know that. They don't have to ask either.
Appreciate you, man. This
Mark
is good,
Weller.
Good to meet
Thank you.
I'm sorry we didn't get more sunshine. We'll come back and do it
we'll
this
come back
Mark,
another time.
Thank you. Mark Weller,
Don.
Weller Development.
It,
I'm feeling pretty darn positive about Port Covington. How about you, Nestor?
I'm feeling positive because I live 2 miles away and they have rye here.
And we're going to add to your
Don's is already gone. Did you see that?
Your Jennings Burger, your crab cake at Fadley's. We're going to add to your chicken and waffles, and now we're going to add a little fried chicken down here at Rye Street Tavern. I'm feeling positive.
Bye week. Go Ravens. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Baltimore Positive for Rye Street Tavern in downtown with the Sagamore folks and the good folks down here at Port Covington. We're back for more right after this.